that maybe we need to make a mark as this committee that the food that we receive is half good, half bad. We should not have this there. We should not have this drink as a portfolio committee for health.
Exactly.
So I'm protesting, and if it has to change in this parliament, it will have to start with us.
Yes.
The day we show a discomfort with this, as this committee, the more we can then be able to influence others. But if we are still, and they look at us, like children looking at us, but you can't go out and say to your child, stop smoking, and they see you laughing with that. So the day we will deal with these issues ourselves as a committee, that's when our influence will rub into others. I'm not saying we may take a decision now, but the members who are here must actually indicate when are we ready to talk about them. Not necessarily for the health of ours, but for the sake of the health of others.
Just serve whiskey with it, Chair.
Just a whiskey? West now. All our members, please, the comments I'm going to start with are very important. And please, get those members who are going to join us late, if they misbehave, remind them about these comments that I'm going to start with, because they are very critical. We welcome you, Dr. Perry Krishnasam, with your team that you'll introduce when it gets an opportunity. Honorable Munai, good morning. When I finish making my introductions, please come to the main table for your own sins.
I'm going to come for my own sins. Honorable Chair.
We are joined by DDG Renee. She used to be my friend, but things fell apart. Anyway, I have other friends now, I don't mind. She just came here to confess she's got other friends, so we are fine with each other. Don't read too much, not too deep friends, we're just friends, comrade friends. But let me say this, when I remember. You might have been looking into the process that we started last week, that it was almost like a closure yesterday. A closure to allow us to come back and look into the report that the team is going to put together. And that report will be what is our budget review for Parliament to take part of the process. So the closure was with the bringing in of the Department of Health to say, General Health, are you mindful of this entity doing this, that, and the other? Department of Health, are you aware, why are you not up to speed on this, that, and the other? So the AG's report, the entities preparing and presenting to us, and then Department of Health yesterday was like rounding up all what we need to put together as our budget review, how this one is not spending well, how this one is overspent, what must happen to this and that. So that's what we did up to at least last night. I insisted that we must have this entity that is here today, compensation for Commissioner for Compensation of Occupational Disease, and they are going to take us through why have they not gone through the AG's processes. Because it has not been just the Council for Medical Schemes telling us this and that alone. Before that, we heard from the AG. So I said to them, they must be very thin on either praising themselves about what they have done, because it would be their word only against no word from the AG. So we do not have a backup to check. Despite that, I felt that we need to listen to them, because there are certain fundamental challenges that they have that make this entity not being able to get into the AG's processes. If that has to be an addendum in our report into Parliament, so be it, but we just cannot not listen to them and come to understand, because in any event, this is an entity that is so much related to some of the things that we do. So I'm raising these issues, honorable members, so that you understand and brief those members who are coming late, join us to say, why is it that we still have them, even though tentatively yesterday it was like we are rounding up on what we need to put together. There may as well be an addendum on our report tomorrow based on what we are going to discuss with them. Please listen carefully and advise how to take this process forward, at least about this entity. And I'm just preparing that to you, Dr. Kisnasam. You then can start. For those honorable members who have just joined us, I noticed that you slept late, but my other life, Honorable Wilson, I was a soldier, and in the army, we don't come late, otherwise you might as well be early for tomorrow. So my other life is still with me, of being a soldier, and we can end. So we will not introduce ourselves to Dr. Kisnasami until when we are making presentations, when we are asking you questions. That's when members, please remind us, was we just met you not more than a month ago. Okay, that's.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for inviting us. We're a bit worried that Parliament might also be making us a stepchild. So it's really appreciated that you could give us a hearing despite our problems. So I'm Barry Kisnasami, the Compensation Commissioner from the Department of Health.
I'm Ndandam Chali, the head of the Medical Bureau of Occupational Diseases, MDOD.
I'm Dr. Mpora Bada, the head of the Certification Committee at the MDOD.
I'm allowed to be the Deputy Commissioner at CCOD.
Morning, everyone. I'm Meshack Masangani, Director of Finance at CCOD.
To introduce yourself, my once upon a time friend.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Valerie Rainey, head of corporate services, Masma Health.
Chairperson, thanks, and once more, thanks for inviting us to present. Members of recall, we did not reprint, so it's dated post September your presentation, because we were due to present on that day. But we have presented the background to the compensation fund, as well as we talked a bit about the class action settlement. So that took up the bulk of your time, of your committee chairperson, and hence we were told that we would come another day, and this is the day that we are here to present the annual performance plan for 1920. Now, we are sitting, as the chairperson kindly talked through the process, of the fact that we have not gone through the Auditor General process. So, in a sense, we are in a deficit that we are presenting to you our version of events without you having a counterbalance in terms of the Auditor General. And I'll spell out some of the points on that. My previous presentation alluded to the fact that this fund had collapsed 30 years ago and the reasons for that. So members would recall some of the inputs we have made of that. But if there are, and I'll highlight some of those things during this presentation of the 1920 APP. So just to reiterate to members, what we do is we provide medical, so we are an anomaly in the Department of Health. So just to tell members, social protection systems, pension funds, provident funds, retirement funds, and compensation funds normally sit within the Department of Employment and Labor. So it's an anomaly that you landed up with a social protection fund in the Department of Health. And that's partly part of the issues of the collapse of this fund, because Departments of Health generally look after health care, health systems, health services, health policies, and they don't deal with compensation. So while the diseases might be something that might come to them, but they don't deal with this issue about payments and medical assessments, etc. And even further, the medical assessments in this case, we are the only unit, as far as I would recall by law, that has to provide cross-border services. So a normal Ministry of Health, Department of Health, provides health services for people within a country. That's its mandate. Except if there's special arrangements in times of crisis, like wars or floods or disasters, where a Ministry of Health of one country might be called by another country to come and assist. And normally that's through foreign affairs that they would call international relations, that we call it. But this Act, Occupational Disease Mines and Works Act, says that where a mine worker has worked in South Africa, they're eligible for medical assessment in Shashai, Mafeking, Zimbabwe, Malawi, etc. So these are ex-mine workers. So it's a very unique model, Chair, in terms of that. So we provide these medical assessments because you cannot self-diagnose these cases, unlike an injury. silicosis, asbestosis, they take 10 to 20 years to develop, and it's a slow death. In a sense, they are incurable. And for the members who are non-medical in the panel, so in the committee. So we have to provide special technical service, and hence there's two colleagues here that actually provide those services both within South Africa and across borders. It's a narrow bouquet of services. There are six diseases that we deal with. And the difficulty for workers is that they have to go for an injury. So a head injury, for example, they have to go to the Department of Employment and Labor. And for a lung problem, disease, they've got to come to the Department of Health. So it's really very confusing, hence my opening input in terms of this. We also provide post-mortem services. That's to the National Institute for Occupational Health, which is under the National Health Laboratory Service. So where we remove the hearts and lungs, and this socio-culturally has been a major problem. But unfortunately, in many instances, it's the last chance of a worker or ex-worker having a compensation period, because a pathology diagnosis is probably the ultimate, as opposed to a clinical assessment to x-ray and lung function. We then have certification of claims by a medical panel. We then pay, and so the team here are colleagues that are involved at different levels of it. And in order to maintain the fund, we call it revenue from controlled mines and works. So that's to reiterate what we do. So again, I apologize because you don't have the Auditor General's report here. Ideally, you would have checked this report against the Auditor General. Now in the APP, the written version of the APP that we had given you, it was to 31st of December. So some of the data will change because this is an updated, so in the written version, the long version as opposed to this, but you do have this version. So this is up to the 31st of March. So firstly, the annual reports. We were backlogged in the annual reports, but Chairperson, we are making progress. And to say to the committee, unless we don't have any major issues with strikes and unrest and technology problems, for example, we had our information technology system that collapsed for 3 months last year and basically brought things to a standstill at the Medical Bureau and the Compensation Fund. So if things work in terms of stability of the organization, because we've also had labor problems for 3 months as well, we will complete our backlog of annual reports with the Auditor General's inputs by August next year. So we are giving you a firm commitment in terms of that. And in terms of the update, we had moved from a disclaimer. This fund had a disclaimer in the 10-11 financial year. From the 11-12 financial year, which has already been submitted to your previous committee, we actually came to a qualification on revenue. And I'll spell out what we are doing about that through the Deputy Commissioner about. But on the payment side, we actually have a clean bill of health. And there are some matters of emphasis which we are sorting out. But generally, we moved from a disclaimer. I don't want to compare us with another fund, but today the Portfolio Committee on Employment and Labour is looking at the other compensation fund, and they've had a disclaimer. So in a sense...
So, Patrice, I'm sorry for the interjection.
Yes.
The second bullet, they talk about annual reports for 2014-15 and 2015-16 awaiting signature by AG. Subsequent ones, beyond that?
Yeah. So 16-17... it's been submitted to the Auditor General. 17-18, it's a trial balance stage, so it's an accounting term, so it's being prepared. 18-19 is being prepared, and hence we're giving you the... So we will miss the May cutoff deadline for 19-20 next year. So therefore we... And that was part of the problems we had. We had labor unrest earlier this year, which moved us up 3 months. Otherwise, we would have been, Chairperson, in sync by the 31st of March next year to have even completed the 19-20.
So we are behind with your annual report from that financial year, 2014-15.
That's correct.
Right through until the current. Right?
Until the current 1920.
Okay.
And that's the negative, the deficit that we are facing your committee. And you know, our sincere apology on that in terms of the process. Because basically you have to go with our version of events as opposed to having a counterbalance in the attempt of the Auditor General. So the awaiting sign-off is the only, so the sign-off on that chair is a very important point. The legislation was an interpretation by the Auditor General, the Occupational Disease and Mines and Works Act, is what is the status of the fund and the status of the entity. Is it a trading account? Is it a listed entity? Is it an unlisted entity? What is the status of this fund? So they wanted clarification on that. We've written by the Director General to the Director General of Treasury to give us that input. from the work we could do, Chairperson, we discovered that up to 2003, this fund was a listed entity in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. For some reason or the other, the then CFO, Mr. Kenneth Miller, requested an unlisting in the Government Gazette, and it came back into the department. We don't understand the reason for that. But in the meeting we had with the with Treasury, they have said that this entity meets all the requirements for a listed entity. So what we've done now is to clarify that, and all that Auditor General is waiting is to actually wait for that letter, so that they want to just correct that annual report for 14, 15, 15, 16, etc., in terms of saying, well, what its status is. So that's the only thing that's outstanding, but they've completed the audit. We do have the results, but let's present that when it comes through. So that's about the only thing that was delaying this sign-off by the Auditor General was a letter from Treasury, because they didn't want to restate accounts, etc., in the event of a different letter from them about the list. So they said at the moment, in the preliminary discussions, that we are an unlisted entity, and we should write to Treasury to then make it a listed entity by way of a government gazette. So it's a very simple process that we will do in the next 2 or 3 months. Then very quickly to go over the outputs for last year, so that's self-explanatory, and we have some declines because of the information technology system. So the number of medical examinations done per month, certification per month, and the comparator is what was done in the previous financial year. Very important is the one-stop service centers, and these were decentralized services. Historically, ex-mine workers would have to come to Johannesburg. So we opened up one in Kuruman, one in Burgersport, one in Carltonville, etc. And we also had decentralized services in two in Lesotho, two in Mozambique, etc. in terms of that. And Dr. Rabada has been very influential in delivering mobile health services. And I gave you all some examples in the previous presentation of a mobile service with banks, etc., going to the people in Amzumkulu, Machatil, etc. On payments, we paid out 207 million to 9,000 claims, and compared to 254 million in the previous year. And of this, about 71 million went to neighboring countries in terms of the process. So this is the sign of certification per month, which compares year to date in terms of the process. So you can see that in the month of May, June, May, June, July was when the last year, when the compensation system collapsed completely, the IT system. This was known by the department, but we didn't have the funds, 25 million, to resuscitate that IT system. So the mining companies have put in the money for a interim solution, and they're now putting in a final solution for that. We're in the final stages of working through the ITT governance structures to get the new system in place. But we do have a functioning system now, hence we could track these things. On payments, so these are the payments in terms of last year and this year, so payments in this period. And you can see in terms of the bars, the blue bars versus the orange bars, that because of some of the backlogs we've had, we didn't do so well in terms of activity. So the highlights, we did spend some time, thanks Chairperson, you allowed us a presentation last time on the class action settlement of 5 billion rand, of which 4 billion rand is for direct benefits to transfers to people with silicosis and TB from 1965, and the other issue was about 1 billion is being set aside for the administration of that fund and the medical assessment, etc. So this was the highlight last year, and Minister Motsoaledi at that stage was part one of the people who helped with the settlement and myself. The second issue was we had a high-level meeting on TB in New York, the United Nations high-level meeting on TB, which was attended by our president, minister and myself, together with some senior officers of departments like DDG, Jorgen Pillay. What we did at the meeting is that we also brought in silicosis and TB, what we call vulnerable workers, into that declaration. So this is, in the sense of TB being a, that silicosis makes workers vulnerable, this was brought in, and some of us actually made sure that talk gets in. And we had a very important BRIC side event on TB hosted by South Africa at the UN High Level meeting. So what are we going to do this year? So we are going to bring to this committee submission on amendments, and the amendments are linked, I mean, this has been an ongoing issue with our annual performance plan, and we missed the vote in your previous committee, so, but we will be coming to you for amendments in terms of the process of new workers going to the Department of Labor, and ex-workers and current workers remaining in the fund, and then also some amendments on the levies, etc., but we will be looking at the process to actually get this act amended, and then deciding on the future of this funding system. The second issue was the database of current and ex-mine workers. One of the big issues, because of the migrant labor system, we never had a database in the past. So we've now perfected the database, but we now want to extend it to all controlled mines. And that's part of the issue of the revenue problems we've been having, because the Auditor General has asked us, how do you know how many workers have done risk shifts? Because the levy is based on risk shifts. And therefore, how do you know you're collecting the exact amount of money? And the other issue was we needed the database to also pay our people. Remember, one third of the ex-mine workers are in the Eastern Cape, and one third of the ex-mine workers are in the Sutu and Mozambique, and the rest are scattered around. So that's one of the issues that we have. It's an electronic database and input. Then actuarial valuation reports have to be done. We just awarded the tender for actuarial valuation, so that will continue. And then submission of annual reports and financial statements, 16, 17, and 17, 18. But we are hoping that actually to complete all of them by next year. So we do have a draft opinion on 14, 15, and 15, 16, pending the finalization of the legal status. That's a letter to Treasury. And 16, 17 has been approved for submission, and 17, 18 being prepared for submission. And then, of course, we'll be in touch with 18, 19, and 19, 20. So on control mines and works, we have 236 control mines and works out of the plus minus 1,700 entities registered with the Department of Minerals and Energy. And so one of the issues we had, and we are grateful that, Chairperson, last time you called a joint meeting of the two committees. So Dr. Michali has been working very closely with the Department of Mineral Resources about the updated register. Because again, Auditor General wanted to know that if you're not collecting money from X, Y, and Z mine, is there a reason for that? So we are saying the mine is closed. They are saying they want a closure certificate. Otherwise, they won't know that the mine is closed or not closed. So we've had great difficulties working with Minerals and Energy, and that's something we're trying to resolve in terms of that register with Gazette and put together. In order for the completeness of revenue. This is our qualification on the completeness of revenue. In fact, if we come out of this qualification, then we actually have matters of emphasis and an unqualified report. So here's the compensation fund. I'm going to hand over to my colleagues. The budget is managed by Meshack Maswangani and the Deputy Commissioner and process. So this is the budget of the fund, which is separate from the budget for administration. We're going to talk to you later on. Our budget for administration comes from the Department of Health, from voted funds within Ian van der Merwe and the DG, and Mr. Remy is here. And this has been one of the anomalies in the fund, that this fund's monies go for the payment of the income protection, the physical amount to people, the cash transfers, but the administration of the fund is paid for by government. Typical levies have to cover both the administration, the cost of health care, and the cost of income protection. In this case, the cost of health care and the cost of administration is borne by government for the voted fund. So we're going to tell you about that, but noting that the main issues for your committee and this fund is what the Deputy Commissioner will take you through now. Thank you, Chair.
Where is this fund coming from, this one? From the mine?
This is the levy from the mining company based on risk shifts. So if I did 100 risk shifts per month, so gold is valued at 5 rand per risk shift, coal is 2 rand per risk shift. So number of workers that did a risk shift, and we collect the money every month.
Okay.
Yeah. And we do have a separate bank account, and it's safe and secure. Auditor General has checked on that, but again, it's our view on it. Deputy Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. These are an audited figures on the fund. You see, it's a slightly different administration. In our case, refers to bank charges, interest paid on the claims, stuff like that. So it's not administration like you would find in a department where you involve personnel. In our case, personnel is being paid by the department directly. So in 2018-19 is 8.5 million, and then 8.7 in 2019-20, and 2021 8.9, and in 2021-22 9.3 million. Pensioners, in terms of the previous act, the Minimum Consensus Act, it allowed for people to opt for a pension rather than a lump sum, but the current act doesn't allow for that. So you still have a number of people who qualify for pensions, but you know, over time, you know, as they pass on, the number will decrease. Eventually, we won't be paying this. This is from voted funds, which are transferred from the Department of Health to CCOD. And the pensioners are they also get increased in line with when the Minister of Finance announces budget every year. The increases that are given to pensioners are also affected on this pensioners within the CCOD. It's 3.8 million in 2018-19, 4 million in 1920, 4.2 in 2021, and then 4.5 in 21-22. X minus, this is a category of payments. This is payments for the one lump sum payment for first degree and second degree. In 1819, it's 151 million, and then in 1920, 159 million, and in 2021, it's 176 million, and in 2021, 185 million. You see that the increase in trend, because with the cooperation between us and the gold mine groups, there has been an increase in the number of payments, but also over time, the threshold for processing of payment has been increased in line with inflation, and hence this increase in trend in the figure. Tuberculosis, current mine workers, even ex-mine workers who has left the mine, you know, when they get sick and they go on treatment, they are being paid 75% of the earnings that they lost. So the figure might appear to be small, but because of the raises which they are paid are lower compared to the permanent diseases. But in terms of numbers, you will see most of the payments we made is to for tuberculosis treatment, where people are going treatment. In 1819, it was 36.6 million, and in 1920, 38.7, and in 2021, the projection is that it will be 42.5 million, and in 2021, 22, 44.8. And that's the total expenditure projection from 1920 up to 2022. If we can go to the next slide. These are levies, collected levies. These are levies we imposed on controlled mines. Controlled mines are all mines that are directed to be controlled and waxed. We pay levies based on the commodity. And in the 15-16, I think there was an increase in the levy rate. It's almost 297 million. And because it was implemented during the financial year, there was an expectation that in 16-17 increase as reflected here, which is 335 million. 17-18, 320, almost 321 million, and then 18-19, 315 million. Non-tax, that's interest and on our investment. Because, you know, whatever invest, or whatever money we have collected from levies that we're not using, we invest in short-term investments for of not more than 12 months. 50% is invested with the South African Reserve Bank, the other 50% with the commercial banks. So in 15-16, we earned 201 million, and then 16-17, 270, and then 17-18, 265, and then in 18-19, 260. Transfers, this is for pensions, as I explained in the previous slide, this is what we received from the Department of Health. Then your expenses and the surplus remaining after accounting for expenses for 15-16 will be 329 million, 434 in 16-17, and 395 million in 17-18, and 378 in 18-19. Investments, these are the investments that we currently hold, as I explained earlier on, within two commercial banks and the South African Reserve Bank. 15-16 was over 3 billion, and then 16-17 very close to 4 billion, and 17-18 4.1 billion, and then 2018-19 is 4.3 billion. I can mention that as at the end of September, we are currently at 4.65 billion. I think this is a compound increase, because the money that we don't need, we roll over, and fortunately the investment, the interest that you earn from the Reserve Bank, which they pay monthly, unlike in the commercial banks, which is paid at the end of the term, it's compounded on a monthly basis, and the increasing trend in the benefits. But also whatever levies you have collected, if we don't need it immediately, we also channel it to the investments. And then receivables, these are levies that mines own or they owe to us, some of them could have been, mines are paying levies a month after the due date. So in 15-16 it was 27 million, which was slightly high, and in 16-17 we were very conservative, it was 1.9 million, and then 17-18, 4.2 million, and then there's an increase, you know, as more mines are brought onto the fold to pay levies, you know, there's an expectation that 14.6 million will be from reservables. And there's the total there in terms of total assets, 3.2 billion in 15-16, 3.9 in 16-17, 4.2 billion in 17-18, and then 4.4 in 18-19. And then below is your accumulated reserves, 2.1 billion in 15-16, 198 million in 16-17. The huge the reason for that was movement in the, if you look at below, you look at provisions. After the actuarial valuation was done, there was sort of a knock on the accumulated reserves, hence the huge the fall in the accumulated reserves in 16-17, and then 17-18 it moves to 594 million, and then 18-19 is 972 million. What happens immediately after the actuarial valuation is done? Whatever deficit has been incurred from that process, it's expensed in advance. So going forward, whatever levies you are earning would begin to reduce your deficit as you go on. And provisions, these are from an actuarial evaluation exercise. They project the potential liability of the fund. You know, they run tests and models. You know, given the history of people who are working in the mine, given the progression of the diseases, how long it takes for somebody from the time they enter a mine until they've got a full-blown silicosis, and they would generate these figures and give us to us as a liability. And you'll see the provisions in 15-16, it's just over 1 billion, and then after the actual revolution in 16-17, it went to 3.6. And then 17-18, 3.6 again, almost it came down slightly. The same goes for 18-19. Yeah. I think we have touched on this with the presentation of the previous slide on financial performance. The same goes for investment.
So, Chair, that's the position of the fund. It's a healthy fund at the moment, at currently at 4.6 billion. But in terms of the of this process, it's lower. So, as of September, and we are in the process now that the actual valuation is being awarded. We'll start preparing for the next actual evaluation, and then we'll know where we are in terms of the levy calculation. So, in terms of relating the expenditure to the outcome goals. So firstly, the stability in the number of claims. So we and I showed you the steep increase. So overall, we in the last 3 years we paid out 760 million to 23,000 claims. So, you know, compared to a fund that adversely collapsed, not knowing our people. So while the diseases are incurable, at least we could do these cash transfers. And of course, that will now be supplemented by the class action settlement, particularly for the two diseases. Remember, there are other diseases like black lung, poor workers, pneumoconiosis, asbestosis, etc., which are not covered by this class action. This class action only covered the gold mining industry, a limited number of mines, mining companies, and inputs. But although the claimant lawyers are now indicating that they're going to go after coal mix and then platinum. So there we should notice this. I think Sasol has already been in the firing squad for some of its coal mines, etc. That's just poor if you've been following the press. Partnerships were very important. We didn't have, based on the MOU between the department and the gold working group, and some of them were present at your previous meeting in terms of support of us and at previous portfolio committee meetings. They really provided substantive technical human resources to help us to move to where we are. So the partnerships with the gold mining companies, the Mineral Council of South Africa, the trade unions in the mines and work sector, neighboring country governments and social partners like different global funds, World Bank, etc., has really brought about a very interesting model about delivery of services to the people who built this economy. We then started this process of one-stop service centers. Unfortunately, we didn't have funds to provide a one-stop service center in every province. So at the moment, four provinces have a one-stop service center as a demonstration model. We are in the process of discussing with the Eastern Cape Department of Health, because of the ones that ex-mine workers being in the Eastern Cape, about how we're going to announce services through facilities in the Eastern Cape beyond the Amtata one-stop service center. And 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting in the office of the Premier, who is coordinating the overall program for the Eastern Cape, and similarly with the Sutro and Mozambique. Revenue, we have a problem. We've only got three financial inspectors, so we are trying to look at a new model about how we can actually inspect these potrol mines, because as I said, Auditor General wants details of a functional mine or a non-functional mine. And remember, these 300 and plus minus 300 mines are all over Southern Africa, South Africa. So to get to Khartoum basically takes us 2 days from Johannesburg. To get to a quarry in the Western Cape, so we've got quarries, it could be a three-person quarry in Amdunkulu, as opposed to a 10,000 mine in, you know, a manganese mine in Otterzell. So for those colleagues that come from Northern Cape or that you know that, especially you've got to get to the flight, get into a car, and then drive to the mine and do the inspection. So this has been some of the problems that's affected us in terms of that qualification on revenue. And the third issue was the closure of the mine. The Department of Minerals and Energy gives the closure certificate. And if we don't have a copy of the closure certificate, then we can't input. The last issue on mines was mergers, acquisitions from mining companies. And often they don't tell us that they are merging and acquiring. And if you've been following the press, there's been a series of major mergers and acquisitions. And that's been some of the issues that have been affecting us as well. But we are putting that together. Yes, Deputy Commissioner?
Chair, I thought maybe I should add on the, you know, if one look at the qualification we're getting on revenue, you know, we've got over 246 mines, you know, spread all over the country, so we only have three inspectors. So what happens? The AG would question, say, if you say this is the revenue that's generated, are you sure that this is complete and accurate? The only way you can do that is with inspections, where you verify going behind the scene and look at the source document for submission of the ship, you know, to verify it's correct. And once you have done that, you're able to say, you know, we've done this exercise, we've verified that for this particular mine, they said they went so many shifts, this is a true representation. That means whatever levies they paid are accurate. But now, you know, the way the AG audits, you know, the AG will go to, there's a database of previously gazetted mines. The AG will go and pick up any mine out of, I think, over 1,000 mines and say, here's a mine previously controlled, you know, you're not collecting them from this mine. Because you are still on the ground, you can't cover all the mines. The AG would, in the process of auditing, just pick up any of the mines. Why do we did initially?
The Commissioner, that point is neither here nor there. That's what they do. You tell them I've got 6,000 units in the country, you can't tell them, no, only go here. They go wherever they like. So, no point. Don't motivate too far with it. It's neither here nor there. Let's do it. Let's keep that part. All you are saying, improve and increase your inspectors. You can't say there's so many, but look, AG, go here, don't go here. It can't work.
That's correct. That's correct. I agree with you. I was just highlighting the challenges that we have, but I think you're right on that point. So
I want to move on. So the amendment, as I pointed out, was a problem with the law, the Occupational Disease Mines and Works Act, where this is probably the only social protection fund. You can take a medical aid fund, you take the compensation fund in the Department of Employment and Labour, you take a pension fund where administration and care is covered by the levy. In this case, the administration, medical examinations and health care has to be covered by the Department of Health from the voted fund budget. We continue with the actuarial valuations. So now that the tender has been awarded, that's in preparation for 31st March 2019 and 2020. And then we pointed out about some of the decreases in performance owing to budget constraints. Right, so this is the budget that we get from the Department of Health through Ian van der Merwe, and this is what you would have had an APP presented by the Director General, and you would have had annual reports. So this is audited by the Auditor General in the Department of Health, but we're going to just take you through for purposes. Mr. Masongani manages this budget. Mr. Masongani, through the chair.
Thank you. Yeah, as indicated, that the day-to-day running costs for the CCOD and MBOD are borne by the National Department of Health. So on an annual basis, they will give us an allocation of what to spend. And as indicated as well, that the levy that we collect from mines only caters for the payment of the compensation claims and nothing else. So for 2018-19, the total allocation that we received from National Department of Health was 65.6 million, out of which 35.1 million was allocated for compensation of employees. And there we spent 35.3 million, which is 100% spent. Goods and services, that was 24.3 million, and we managed to spend 19.9 million, which is 82% spent. So transfers, that is related to the payment of pensioners. As indicated, again, in the old act, claimants were given an option to opt for a monthly pension as opposed to the lump sum payment. So currently we've got around 68 pensioners who are receiving a monthly pension. So the payment of such pensions, again, they are, borne by the National Department of the National Department of Health. So the allocation for those transfers was 3.8 million, and the 3.8 million again was transferred to, CCOD, which was 100%. So capital, that's for, machinery and equipment and other capital expenditure. So the budget allocated there was 2.2 million, and then the actual spend was 213 million. So which is the 9%.
213,000.
Oh, sorry, 213,000. It is because I'm dealing with millions. Okay, 213,000 for the collection. So the actual spend was 9%. 9% there. So the reason for the underspending is attributed to the fact that we had to purchase the X-ray machine, which the doctors use to do their benefit medical examination. So by the end of the year, 31st March 2019, the process was underway to acquire the machine, so we didn't manage to pay for it. So that is why we got an underspending there. So overall, we spent 39.2 million against 65.6 million, which is 90% spent. So the next one is the voided funds budget for the MTF period for 2019-2020, the current financial year. We have been allocated 68.6 million, out of which 37.1 million went to compensation of employees, and then 26.5 million went to goods and services, and then 4 million that transfers the payment of the monthly pension. Then for capital, we've been allocated 925,000. Then 2020-2021, this is the expected budget. It may change, due to some other factors. But for now, we're expecting to get 72.4 million for 2020-2021, out of which 39 will go for compensation of employees, 28.5 million will go for goods and services. Payment for pensions will get 4.2 million. Then machinery and equipment, the capital expenditure, that will be 375,000. So for 2021-2022 financial year, the total budget that we are expecting to get from the National Department of Health is 76.4 million, out of which 41.3 million will go for compensation of employees, 80.1 million will be for goods and services. And then 4.5 million would be for transfers, which is the payment for the monthly pension. And then 395,000 would be for capital, which is machinery and equipment and other capital expenditures. So that's all from my side for the fund.
So Chair, we just want to get on to the main purpose of our objectives for this year. So the first one is related to the legislative amendments, which we are finalizing. The difficulty, we have spoken to Ms. Rennie and colleagues at National, because we need transversal support from the legal section of the National Department of Health that helps us with these. So we know the amendments. The question is how to get it into the process to then ultimately get it. So we will submit to the DG and then thereafter for the parliamentary process to kick in. And I gave you some of the problems around. There are technical problems with that act and there are policy problems with the act in a sense of workers in the Department of Employment and Labour. One of the issues we ask, Chair, is the possibility of your committee convening with the Department of Employment and Labour because of this issue around social protection. And that would help with this amendment, because in the medium to long term, this should not be a Department of Health function. And it's very important with the oversight committees who are involved with legislative changes and passing of legislation and input is the possibility of working with your counterparts in the Department of Employment and Labour. So that's an important issue there. The second one is governance and management. These were previous problems with disclaimers and things where you didn't have functioning audit and risk committees, functioning advisory committees, etc. Some of them are statutory within the Act, and the performance there and then inputs in terms of the meetings of these committees. Then the effective and efficient management of the fund. So the issue is about the employee database and getting them forward. So we currently have got the database with the 6 gold mining companies, and we now want to extend it. Remember, we've got plus minus 300 control mines in work. So we want to actually get it up to hopefully 25%, if not all, depending on the process. So that's the register of control mines in work, and that will help with some of the issues around the revenue generation and the research. Then on payment, we have 7.6. This is related to a cutoff when we did an assessment of how many unpaid payments. So members will recall from my previous slide that we have 100,000 unpaid claims amounting to 1.2 billion rand. So this is related to that cutoff point of the 31st of March where we were trying to track people and pay them. And unfortunately, many of our people don't have addresses. We had to put in special programs to go to Eastern Cape, etc. So this is related to that process about how many are we going to track and pay from prior to it. So members will recall 50% of our unpaid claims are from before the year 2000. 75% of our unpaid claims are before the year 2005. So we're really dealing with a massive backlog in some of these issues, and people don't have fixed credit of their boat or might have died and things like that. So that's that process. Then new claims from 1st April 2018, we put ourselves a target of saying that month one is a medical assessment, month two is certification, and month three is payment. So we said, let's give ourselves 90 days to actually deliver to our people in terms of the process. So this was a tracking. Now, we didn't have the IT system in place. We just installed that process now. So we'll begin to start getting the gains from the IT system that tracks this internal process in terms of 3 months of receipt of completed documents. And then the revenue side was on the issue of the 71% was the last listing, 80% of control mines and works paying levies. We've given you some examples of the discrepancies we have in terms of the problems of not enough financial inspectors, but we're trying to work at that as well in terms of the revenue target. Actuarial valuation. So we do have a completed actuarial valuation as 2018. Now that we've appointed the actuarial valuator going forward, we are preparing the documents for 31st March 2019, and then 2020 will kick in as well. And then annual reports I presented to you before to try and get over the backlog of the annual reports. Then in terms of some of the targets, this is within government resources that we feel we could reach these targets for payment. If we get additional resources from the Minerals Council and the mining companies, then we could increase the target. We were told previously by your committee, previous members, that we are putting low targets and we are within high achieving. And we pointed out that within our resources, I'm very much dependent on what the funding comes from external parties like the Minerals Council of South Africa or the gold mining company, and in this case the Siamese Trust, which has been set up because we are overlapping the same client base. So those are the numbers we have about the certification. By the way, the certification committee doctors are also paid out of voted funds, and it's sessional appointments for part-time practitioners that come in and assist Dr. Michali. In terms of payments, so we set ourselves 7,700, and then the inspections, we've got a low target of inspections of 70-77, and I mentioned some of the difficulties of going across South Africa in terms of the process, but we are looking at electronic submissions and some other mechanisms to try and reach the Auditor General's process. As Chairperson correctly pointed out, you can't tell the Auditor General where to go to. Outreach and awareness activities, we try and take a rights-based approach of telling workers their rights, ex-workers, and we work very closely with ex-mine worker associations and trade unions, ANCU, UASA, Solidarity, NUM, and NUMSA are the 5 trade unions we work with, and we have regular outreach activities where we work with them in terms of it, including mining companies. And then in terms of TB, this was a special target for TB because of the problem that we're having about TB in mining. So we highlighted it in terms of pulling out the process. So towards the conclusion, firstly, to run a 4.6 billion rand fund covering approximately 1.6 million workers in South Africa, Southern Africa. I talk about Mozambique, Lesotho, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Eastern Cape, etc. is that we don't have enough funds. So if we don't make the changes to the legislation to get a better revenue model where the levy must cover the cost, then that's the one problem. Secondly, the issue around the fact that partnerships has given us tremendous gains forward that we would not have been if we had not got this partnership. In fact, our entire financial system, we've got 5 chartered accountants that's helping the Deputy Commissioner and the Director of Finance in terms of the annual report. So they are preparing, and they're fully paid for by the gold mining company. I was amazed when I came chairperson in 2012 to find that we didn't have a chartered accountant. At that stage, the fund was 3 billion rand. I mean, that's, you know, amazing things that we have to now do, grab new accounting standards, etc. And Auditor General manages you according to those standards. And here we were running a fund with no serious, notwithstanding our colleagues have tried, but we needed some high-powered input and the resident of control mines I've talked about. We want to come with the amendments for the new model for governance, management and service delivery in terms of the legislative change. There was a concept of, we have to do, every 2 years we have to do this medical assessment. Chairperson, we couldn't find out where was the science behind this. We doing these annual reports on people. So we now come up with a model with data where certain workers will only have a medical assessment once in 5 years, others will have a medical assessment once in 10 years. Because the likelihood of getting silicosis, it has to be a risk-based approach. So, and we need to collect dust levels, etc., and input on that. And then very important, this has been a major problem, that health professionals aren't trained in occupational health in general, health of workers, and secondly, in particular, occupational health disease. So you need certain technical tools. I don't want to know what your undergraduate training was, because I had not set up occupational medicine then at Natal University. I don't know other members of the committee who have gone to medical school, how much exposure they have to occupational. So this is one of the things we'll have to stimulate, and probably in your meetings with the Health Professions Council, which also reports to your committee, and I'm not too sure if the medical schools, nursing colleges, etc. come and report, or whether you call them in, can we start raising this issue? There are 17 million people at work, including parliamentarians are workers. So how is your health and safety being managed? Have you done a health risk assessment at Parliament? Have you done a hazard identification, etc.? Do you have pre-employment examination? So the key area is that 11 million people are in formal work, so could we actually begin? So we'll be looking at this narrow part about occupational lung disease and training program, but there's a wide issue of workers' health and safety in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, for those who were here when I started, you would understand why we brought this presentation. It really opens it up for many directions. What is that is expected of us? What can we do to assist this process going forward? What can we do to speak to other colleagues in other portfolio committees to come and narrow or take share of what we are listening to? The sensitivity that has happened in the country, and just as we are closing up, I don't know why our medical schools were not modeled to train and expose us on occupational health, because this is a country that has been mining even for many, many studies, whole of studies. So anyway, maybe we can't correct everything that has happened, but moving forward, we can try and assist going there. So let me see the hands that would like to speak. We are just trying to do the opposite and start at the back and then end in the front. Okay, I'll start with the Honorable Chirwa, Honorable Bakhube, Honorable Wilson, and then move to the front, Honorable Janti, and end with Honorable Nya, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a few questions here, some clarification questions. I want to ask what the position of the COD is on the reduction of lowering standards for coal dust silica. And number two, on the issue of hearing loss, is there a position that was that the COD has in regards to adding hearing loss to one of the effects or that could be compensated not just for the treat illnesses and diseases, because there's substantial research done on how hearing loss is also associated to working in mines, and also on standardizing hearing tools for mines, protection gear, and so go deeper and deeper, and I guess warm and all that, hearing is obviously affected. I just want to know if there is like a standardized protection, hearing protection thing that keeps on getting developed and not just old school, where miners don't even wear it because it's not comfortable and then end up with issues of hearing. And have there been programs that still be aimed at teaching or making or creating awareness amongst the new miners coming into the industry of the dangers of being in the industry as mine workers? And if so, what is the response then from the new mine workers? I also saw that there have been mines that fail to pay levies. What is the mechanism of holding them accountable or ensuring that they do? And if they don't, what are the consequences? Do they still get are the consequences enough? You know, because there's also other issues that mines are found to be wanting in. Like, they don't do the things that they promise to do when they get their licenses to mine and all of that. There's a whole list of things that we found wanting in. But on the issue of paying levies, because they have to pay the levies. And also, I also want to know where does the money for compensation come from? Does it come from the mines or does it come from the department? I think I want clarity there specifically to know if it comes from both the mines and the department or part of the COD, how much, what is the percentage? Because then I have another opinion if part of it comes from the department, you know, that the mining industry is extremely lucrative, but the consequences then of mining rest on the department, and that can't be left alone. And then if that is the case, what then is the way forward, and what does it would be advice the committee in dealing with this thing? Oh yeah, I saw there's also a trend of increase on the money paid to ex-miners, and you mentioned some of the reasons, the inflation and all of that. I want to know if there's an increase of the debt of miners, also part and parcel of the reason why there's more money being paid to miners. I think also the information on that must be just made. You want to know, are there more people dying because of mining, or there's like a standardized, not that there's like a better way of dying, or like the law, I just want to know what the trend is of people dying out to a disease related to mining. What the trend is there, is there an increase, is there a reduction? And you say here about something you wrote on stabilizing claims. What do you mean? What does stabilizing claims mean? Does it mean paying less? Who's compromised in the process of stabilizing claims? If that can just be made clear for me. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chair.
My
question is twofold. It is based on some of the governance issues that you have highlighted, and then the AG and the financial person. Now, I'm quite concerned because I understood what you were saying about, I mean, and when I went back to what the Auditor General gave us last week or earlier this week, your annual report, your audit reports have been outstanding for the past couple of years. So I can understand you. I mean, you did explain it, but I didn't quite understand as to why. Because ultimately, I mean, we can see, you know, how you allocate this funding here, how it's been spent. But the reality is that there's a reason why there's an Auditor General process, so that we can see the integrity of the work that is being done and how that money is managed. So we can't necessarily say, you know, well, you know, we don't like how the AG does its work, and you know, that's how auditing works. And so somehow the CCOD needs to figure out a way to clear this backlog. And I mean, you started speaking about, okay, well, we need to submit this later. The reality is that it's been outstanding for a couple of years. Why has that been the case? Why are they outstanding, and why have they not been updated and signed off? So that I just want to understand the why. And also, I mean, if we can get some confirmation from the CCOD as to when this issue is, and I saw your objectives here, as to when this issue is going to be resolved, because I think it will be a mess of us if we keep seeing the same pattern in the next financial years to come. Then the issue around government, I mean, I think you spoke at length around the issue of staff shortages and scarce resources. And I think all the entities that have been here will attest to the same challenges, you know, one way or the other, that resources are scarce. But ultimately, we need to find a way forward to clear the backlog. I mean, you speak about backlogs that date back to 2005. And so what is the timeline to clear those backlogs? But more importantly, is there a space for a public-private partnership initiative to assist with clearing some of these backlogs? Are there alternatives, creative ways and means to clear some of your backlogs in order, you know, as a way of doing business which is not necessarily standard? And I mean, and then the other thing that you spoke about is the IT system that broke down, and then that caused a lot of challenges for you. I'm assuming that's now been resolved. But I mean, you know, and one of the issues was that you guys couldn't afford to pay for it to be fixed. So again, just some clarity there, because obviously the work that you do is crucial. And I'm assuming that, you know, the IT system is the backbone of some of the work that you do, because you can't necessarily move without that being resolved. So it almost seems to me that you were hampered from being able to do your job with this. So, I mean, what was the sequence of events there? Why did it take so long to be resolved, besides the money issue? But yeah, I mean, have you considered any creative ways in which to be able to do your work? I know you've got a lot of social partners, but ultimately we're going to move into resource constrained environment even more. So we have to think creatively as entities and departments in ways that we can continue doing our work that doesn't just require unallocated funds, but that can allow partners to get on board and help us do the work that we do. So I'd love to hear some of your thinking in terms of the future.
And whether or not have you been innovative in seeking solutions? Thank you, Chair. I think I'm principally covered. I'm looking at your challenge, and I understand your challenges, and we've obviously been through this over the last couple of years. And it distresses me that a section as important as this is actually having to face these struggles, because what we're dealing with is the lives of our people that have not been protected or not been properly protected in the industry. My question just simply was, we see the challenges, we know the challenges, we've been through this, and yet the challenges do not seem to be improving, and my concern is you're not getting support from the department. I need to know, what is the National Park Department said about this? Who are you liaising with? And why is this support not forthcoming? When we're dealing with lives of people, we can't mess around. We support, we must protect our people. And if we're not adequately protecting our people and the department is not helping, what is the next step? Thank you.
Honorable Gandhi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've been covered by my colleagues on some of the issues. But what I wanted to stress is that I think the doctor said here, there are promises that by next year they shall have done with all the backlog in annual report. I am hoping that this is going to happen, because we, without this backlog being cleared, we are all found wanting. And I think that there's a colleague that said those mining companies that do not want to pay the levy, there must be some way of enforcing them to pay the levy. I was looking at this, talking about the investment of billing. And now I'm speaking from a non-financial and a person who has seen the suffering of the mining. And I think it is correct that we should do more awareness so that people who are in the rural areas should know how they can become a. I know there are some who have been messed around by the other people who said they were going to help them. And I think a better and a stronger awareness campaign to those people who are minors. The typical compensation, when does one get it? Can I be clarified? Those people who get compensated for people, at what stage, when, where do they get?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and colleagues and commissioner and deputy commissioner. One, I think yesterday I was referring to one of the institutions as the word user. I think I should review that word to come to you. Because, one, I mean, you can't spend money and you cannot account for that money. And you can't want us to change legislation to send you to other departments. You are here with us for now. You are getting money from the Department of Health, and you're going to account for that money. So for me, to be frank and honest with you, if there's any organization that needs deployment of forensics to come and investigate, which even in the hawk, whatever, a security class that we have to investigate is this institution. I know you are doing, on the other hand, you've been doing a very great work in your private, what you're dealing with in the work, but money. You are even getting the technical ICT support from the organization that is supposed to pay levy to you in a form of relationship. You can't hold them accountable in money. There are almost close to 1,000 mines in the South Africa that are active, that I know. In maybe more, in the database of the DMR, that issue exists. And I'm saying it's a matter of relationship with the DMR that if the company of a mine conducts Section 11 to transfer ownership, it should be notified this commission. We can't have a commissioner that are toothless, that can't be able to enforce laws where there's valuation, that can collect levies. What is the purpose? You know? And I'm saying that, and on the other hand, you are with the gold mining group, whatever thing, gold group. Where are the platinum groups? Where are the coal groups? Where, I'm just saying, you know, there's lots and lots of mines in which people are subjected to very understated. At least I lost one family. From Silcote, who is working in Bloemfontein mine. That I'm very aware, so that I know that. Because the key issue is that, one of the key issues that I think is very, and also you have separate accounts, and I mean, it's not acceptable that two financial years you can't submit. At least there should have been opinion, worse or good, it doesn't matter. Then at least you can be able to work with corrective measures.
that the Auditor General will be indicated for you to change your financial position. Simple running away from the institution is not enough. Not submitting financial statements. And you've been here for 7 years. You said 2012, isn't it, Commissioner? So they shouldn't be excused to do that. I think if you can't, then other institutional security clerks are going to kick in and investigate this institution. You are spending a sizable number of money. There's cross-border payments that are made. You might be paying costs. It could be a lot of scams that's happening beyond this country and so on. Possibility may exist because you're not auditable. That's a grave doubt, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, on this is so far as finances. The work that they do and the progress they're making in the profession, wonderful. But one area for weakness, which I think I will not repeat for the last time, is the one relating to trying to enforce levy collection. So, what is to be done? Because I don't think we should be in a position to change legislation that they must go to employment and labor. They have not having been what you know accounted for all these years. It's not okay. I don't understand the reason why other money, additional money will not be given to you is because you can't account. No institution chairperson or the department will increase more money for them. They can't even spend, they can't account. Who should give you more money? Who should change the legislation for you to go even to labor? We're not going to do it. You are spending 200 million and all these things, but I'm just saying, it is not. It's not fair, it's not acceptable. So I think you need to know as and when that while on the other hand you are doing a great job, on the other hand the finance is worse. So that can't be acceptable before the popular committee. You need to change the time, you need to turn around the situation. That's what my appeal would be.
In fact,
it needs be, if I was a minister of health, I was going to dissolve this commission and appoint new one that would be able to account. Thank you.
Honourable members, my meeting started at 10 sharp. And when it started at 10 sharp, I was almost tempted to comment after the contribution of Honorable Gwahube. Because her first question was answered by my opening remarks. And the members who were here were there. I accept and respect Honorable Gwahube because you did indicate that you'd be late for the meeting. So I accepted that. But the honor is upon the members who come late to say, what have I missed on the presentation? So that you don't make it to the question again. So I'll leave it at that. It also covers Honorable Munyai, because if he was here too at my opening remarks and then the opening remarks of the commissioner, you'd have been covered. Just try and respect that. If you come late to any meeting, just check with those who are there what has been said, what has been discussed. Then you'll be covered.
Okay.
Commissioner, I would like you to assist me so that we can actually have this committee. It's all found in our presentation. But I just want it in a point form. Probably not today. You can email it to us to say, this is where things are. We are outstanding on the 2014-2015 financial reports. They are going to be signed in. They are sitting on the 18th report right now. We are behind on this one and this one. The process is this. We are far away on this one. There's a third point now. The process is this. So we could understand where we come in as a department. I mean, as a portfolio. You then say number four, we think that this must go and be discussed with the portfolio labor or this, that, and the other. Because of these reasons, put those things step by step, point form to us at your earliest convenience, could be next week, because this is what is going to actually assist to guide us in terms of this. When I opened my remarks, Honorable Member, I did say We almost rounded up yesterday by listening to the Department of Health, having listened to all other entities. This entity is almost sitting outside, and I saw Honorable Kwakube paging through her document. There's nothing we're going to find there from the AG about them. There's almost little or nothing. They said almost nothing because they have not submitted. Whatever, they could have been one line to say, these have not submitted, full stop. As to why they have not submitted, we've gone through that. But anyway, I'm happy to call him again to say it. But that was the opening remark regarding this entity. Hence it is sitting almost outside the process which we almost completed yesterday by listening to all the other entities, benchmarking what they were saying against what the AG is saying about them, and getting the department yesterday to say this was almost rounding up our preparedness to write a report to Parliament regarding what we have been listening to. I then did mention that what we are listening to here today from this entity might just be an addendum to what we are going to submit. While it is sitting outside the AG's, but there will be something that we are going to really listen to them and put together as an addendum to our report going forward. That's the part that you missed out when you started. But let me then ask them to, but again, I'm not really comfortable, Dr. Krishna-san, with the story which says you're going to have revenue increase. You'd want to say the starting point, I think, is to improve visiting mines and make a bigger pool of controlled mines where you can levy from. Because your entry point again would be to increase levies in terms of the pool. Now I think that must also come in with, when you are saying probably because we have less or less inspectors, maybe that's what you need to address, but I think, you guide me if it is wrong, your entry to increasing the pool or the amount of levies is based on you identifying in the whole country mines that must be within the controlled environment. Then you can answer us and help us move forward.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks to the honourable members and input. So we'll try as best as we can. Just unfortunately, the honourable member, I wanted to start with the second and the last input. The previous commissioner was asked by your former committee to be fired. So that's how I came in 2012. So your committee has got those powers. And that's how I came in. When I came in, this is what there were 6 years of disclaimers in 2010-11. 6 years of disclaimers from the previous commissioner, who was a chartered accountant. And this is what I inherited when I came in 2012. That building in downtown Johannesburg is owned by the Department of Public Works, and it's a condemned building. Those were the files. Each file there, and I showed this at the previous meeting. Now, just reminding you. Because unfortunately, some of the members of this committee, fortunately, Chairperson, have been around before, so they know what we inevitably in terms of the process. Each file in that one corner there, on the top right-hand corner, facing me, is a claim. So this is, in fact, if we want to dissolve the commission, we should dissolve this entire structure of 120 people, because we have failed our people in terms of this process. One leader coming at the top can't change it. When we've had people there for 20 to 25 years, civil servants, who did not do their work. And I've come in, I've had personal threats on my life, and I've actually brought the system to where it is today. So it's not about the issues about firing the commission, but your committee has that choice of going to the minister and saying to the minister, this commissioner is not doing his job, and therefore needs to be replaced. Because that's how I came in, when Mr. Motsoaledi made a humble plea to me when I was running a national institute and said, come in. So it's not about the individual, it's about what you can do. But and this building currently, the Department of Labor has inspected it. We have written in terms of working with the National Department of Health, and Mr. Rennie also predates me. Mr. Rennie also knows the history of this place and the lack of support from Pretoria to sorting out this problem in terms of problems. Labor relations, no support in terms of labor relations. It's hard to get hold of people to come and deal with the two internal unions that are creating absolute chaos at the place in terms of the process. So those are things we need to pick up and sort this out. And last year when the labor unions went on strike, I went on an issue to ask Mr. Motsvalia to give me a business continuity process, and that was the final time that we intervened, and that's when the unions went back. Yes, the honorable member is quite correct. There's fraud and corruption in the system. Whether it starts at the top or whether it goes to the bottom can be investigated, and right now we have met with the Hawks and the prosecuting authority in terms of the process, but we'll give you feedback in terms of that process. So whether it's investigating the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, or the 120 people, or the touts on the ground, yes, that is there. But one thing I don't want to say is that this committee, and we admire the committee because you're our leaders in terms of the process, you have powers, and you can exercise those powers. So that's, let me leave it at that in terms of the last second last comment on whether the commissioner should be not there or the commission should be dissolved. But if you can help us with public works, I don't know if any members sit on cross-communication, the building is currently condemned. It has no occupational health and safety issues. It's got no fire protection issues. It's got a range of issues that are affecting us in terms of this process. Let me go on to then some of the issues that, in terms of the ICT system, because I like what the member said. Is there innovation? This is the information technology system that we are due to implement in terms of the public-private partnership. It's a state-of-the-art system from end to end. It's a very busy site, but it covers components of the databases, electronic databases across Southern Africa. It covers components of biometric identification, direct with links to home affairs. The only problem is with neighboring countries, Chairperson, is that we don't have population registrations in neighboring countries. But for South Africa, at least we can link up directly biometric, and I presented some of that work last time. It includes inputs of machine learning and artificial intelligence that reads the chest x-rays and reads the lung function test automatically. So we have that built in. And then it goes on to an automated payment system. So we will come and present, because hopefully you will invite us again for updates in future years, beyond the annual reports, just updates on the annual performance. We used to be invited quarterly. I'm not too sure how the schedule is. So we'll give you updates in terms of the system. And very much important in terms of the model, but I'll come back to that in terms of course. But let me just go in terms of the process from the beginning. So firstly, the whole issue around, thanks to the member on the awareness issues, unfortunately the issue of mining sits between two departments. It sits with us for compensation, which is the end stage, and it sits with Department of Minerals and Energy for prevention. So if there are members here that are sitting on cross-cutting issues, it then links up with the members' comments about what is the coal dust level, what is the silica dust level. And I pointed out previously to you all about the differences between, this is the dust level, what are called occupational exposure levels. This is the previous presentation I did a month ago, Chairperson.
Oh no, Ruchi, look at your slide. This slide is answering one of the questions.
So this is an occupational exposure limit for silica dust. For South Africa, it's 0.1 milligram per cubic meter, the dust level that you asked for. Yeah. Coal dust, I don't have the data at hand, but this is it. This regulation for these occupational exposure limits is regulated by the Mine Health and Safety Act, 1996, under the Department of Minerals and Energy. Now the question to be asked is, why is South Africa at 0.1 milligram per cubic meter, and why is British Columbia, a province in Canada, at 0.025? So why is it that workers in British Columbia who are exposed to silica dust are one quarter exposure limit than South African mine workers? Your committee has to ask those questions. Or you have to link it up with colleagues in the other department, because unfortunately our department doesn't enforce this law. This law is enforced under the Department of Minerals and Energy, and Chairperson, rightly so, you invited those, that portfolio committee members to join us at the last meeting. So the key area is that this is the issues now in terms of the exposure limit, and that was related to your points about the fact of what are coal dust, etc. You'll find for all of these levels, South Africa is sitting at a higher level of exposure, hence our workers are having more dust diseases, etc.
Mm.
But it's you had a link process with noise-induced hearing loss. Noise is unfortunately covered partly under the Mine Health and Safety Act and partly under the Department of Labor Occupational Health and Safety Act.
Mm.
So again, we are not an enforcement authority as the Department of Health. We can assess hearing loss as audiometrists and throat colleagues, etc. So we'll pick up the consequences of hearing loss, but we don't enforce the preventive mechanisms of what is the 85 decibels. So there's a technical term called 85 DBA, and those are things that we're missing. Again, that's the big issue. When we were saying, we were not shifting the blame. We are saying that social protection sits in a different department by international norms. And if the Department of Health was committed, then it must make available $200 million a year to run this operation in the commitment and the support that we need technically and otherwise. But if you've got a large fund, $70 billion, sitting in the Department of Labor, which runs the compensation fund for hearing loss, for injuries in the workplace, etc., then is that the rightful place to be there, etc.? So all I'm saying, member, is honorable member, is that unfortunately, we can't enforce a stoppage in the workplace. So there's a Section 54 notice under the Mine Health and Safety Act, and only the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate can go and say that you have to have a work stoppage under health and safety legislation in the Department of Labor. There's a similar clause in the Occupational Health and Safety Act under the Department of Labor. So I hope that helps you with this cold dust, etc. We see the consequences of black lung because of these exposure limits. We see the consequences of silicosis, but we are not preventing it. So that's the only difference, and I don't have the enforcement measures to prevent that. Of course, we have engaged with our counterparts in minerals and energy, and we've engaged with our counterparts in the Department of Employment and Labor. So I think that covers that. About the issue about personal protection, again, there's an entire field called ergonomics. It's a very new discipline in the country, and which looks at the body physiology, the body anatomy, and the issues about workplace hazards like heat stress, etc. Again, those things come from disciplines in occupational health, but they are mainly sitting, the ergonomic regulations, I think, are being drafted right now by the Department of Labor. So the point you made about heat stress, as you go deeper, yes, I mean, people will virtually, you'll find mine workers who, you know, take off the hearing loss because of sweat. So you've made the right issues. Again, we have to talk to the counterpart in the other department as opposed to us on the preventive measures. So again, I apologize, but I can't have mandate creep, otherwise we'll be accused then of taking over another department's function when we can't even do our own job properly. So I hope that helps with some of those issues, but we are there to assist in terms of that. About new mine workers, as I pointed out, that we work with the trade unions. There's 5 trade unions in the mining sector and the mining companies, but the mining companies themselves, they have awareness campaigns and et cetera. So where we've been invited, with the trade unions, shop stewards, etc., we go and address them about some of these issues, etc. But our concentration has been on ex-mine workers because that's a grouping that's not covered. At least current mine workers come to work and they can be covered. Ex-mine workers, as the Honourable Member pointed out, in Eastern Cape, etc., there's nobody reaching them. So linking up with the awareness, constituency offices are very important, Chairperson, and we'd be very happy to work with you on constituency office level. We've got the database electronic, so if you've got IT links, we will make available the database to you, and then you know people can come in and seek if they've got any input. So that's one of the issues we want to raise with all. If you're having constituency work, invite us. We'll send colleagues that could come and address people at mass meetings or whatever it is, depending on how members work with constituencies. We've also worked with traditional leaders. As I pointed out, we've worked with local government, and right now we have a program with the Eastern Cape that we are kicking off and other governments. But the awareness issues are there. On the money paid to mine workers, what's the amount? So the class action lawsuit was about the additional monies to be paid because our monies were seen as inadequate. But we'll give you the actual amount.
First degree and second degree.
Okay. Yeah, I think the question was why the increase on money paid to mine workers. The amount that we pay to the mine workers increased because we paid more, claiming. Then also the increase on the benefits. So for example, 1 August 2009, the first degree.
Look at the mic. So address here.
Okay.
The number is behind you, but speak here.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so what I was saying is, the increase on the money paid, it is a result of the number of claimants that we paid, and as well as the increase on the benefits. Like, for example, 1 August 2009, the first degree we're paying 47,000, second degree we're paying 105,000. Like, effective 1 April 2018, that was increased to 63,000, that's for first degree, and then the second degree was increased to 140,000. So now, 1 October 2019, we've increased again. First degree is 65,000, second degree is 145,000. So those are some of the reasons that are attributing to the more money that we are paying to the claimants.
So the quantum and about stabilizing claims, which was part of the issue, it was really about getting to people to know their numbers. So we're now stabilizing around 10,000 per annum. But if we can increase the awareness campaigns and all of those things, we'll get more. But we have the funds to pay, so it's not about, but it's our capacity to deliver a program, and if we can increase the capacity, we could do more. In terms of the issue about mines that are not paying levies, so the, our only recourse on that, we don't have a mechanism at this moment in time to close them down. So we could work with our counterpart in the Department of Mineral Resources, but that means Minerals and Energy. Alternatively, we've got to go through an effective process of a legal process, which is that you owe us money, and therefore we have to do this thing. So that again involves going through the State Attorney's Office, Department of Justice, etc. And, well, I mean, we can do that. It's not a infringement, but at this point in time, we don't have a mechanism to shut them down. So we'd have to go through a legal process in terms of the debtor-creditor arrangement in terms of this. There is the issue of the provision of interest payments that will be on top of that. But the closing of a mine or withholding a mine is under completely different legislation. Our legislation doesn't allow us for that, other than getting into a creditor-debtor arrangement, which is a commercial crime type issue, Chairperson. Dying in mines, members will recall there was a bill called NAPISA bill. I don't know if that's reflected. It's the National Public Health Association. So it was a restructuring to have this new surveillance system. In terms of the process. So, the honourable members, about are people dying of mining diseases, are people dying of accidents, are people dying of injuries, etc. We don't have that data. We can give you some of the numbers, because unless we have a post-mortem finding, as I pointed out, that often many of our doctors will write a death certificate, might write natural causes. So we won't know, unless we did a post-mortem, that this is an ex-mine worker and died of a respiratory illness or something, and that could be indirectly linked to the mine. So we have to have special units, like the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the National Institute for Occupational Health, that has to collect this data and interpret it. So when the committee says, how many people are dying, what's the infant mortality rate for the country? So the Medical Research Council gives you that data, or Stats South Africa gives you that data. So unfortunately, we don't have this data at the moment where we can directly attribute a cause, except in certain instances. But I can give you data from our certification committee, from those things that have done, those people that have had this process. Let me go on to the honourable members on the governance issues. We accept the fact that this is an unacceptable situation, and that was the issue. But when you've got limited resources, accounting processes, files, the previous disclaimer was like that. The Auditor General couldn't find 30% of the source files. So you go back to the 10-11 financial year, 30% of the source files could not be found. Now, they were quite willing to accept around 5%, but at 30% it was the same. There was no actuarial valuations done on the fund. So you're talking about clear accounting issues that were not done, and hence this backlog that we have in terms of the process. So that was the issue. Source files couldn't be found? Yes? Okay. So the first issue was, do we correct the issue of source documentation or continue to have disclaimers? And that was the issue. So we corrected that, and now on the payment side, we have a clean bill of health. So our qualification is a qualification on revenue at the moment. It's not a qualification. So on the payment side, the Auditor General was audited our statements up to the, they're waiting the final signature. Again, we have a qualification on revenue, but not on payments. So the two documents that are waiting signature from the Auditor General, which unfortunately was waiting for the final note from Treasury, which says, are we a listed entity, unlisted entity, the point I made earlier on, they are waiting for that clarification so that they can actually give us that input in terms of the process. So there was a series of issues about source documents, actuarial valuation reports, about the financial documentation, about the inspection. So if you go back to the 10-11, it was about a 400-page document. 50% of the 400-page document was related on strictly regulatory issues. Do you have a leave register? Are workers signing in on leave? Do you have a, what's happening with your ICT system on password changes? So you can just go, there were about 50%, all those findings that you've now reduced, they were matters of emphasis. But the substantive finding of the disclaimer was on the payment side, where they couldn't find 30%, and that's where we think maybe there was fraud, etc. When you are losing files, we don't know who this file belongs to. Now on that payment system, we have a very integrated payment system, and we're quite willing, depending on the oversight committee, whether you are making visits, you are come to come and visit us and see the kind of stuff, notwithstanding it's a condemned building, etc. So I hope I'm giving you some of these issues that this fund collapsed 30 years ago. You can't run a $3 billion fund with no accountants, with no IT people. So just go back on the findings, which Ms. Rennie knows about, because she was there at that stage. The 400-page document where 50% was just simple compliance issues, where we're not even complying with Public Service Act and regulations. And Auditor General just went to a tick box, and then the substantive issues on the fund, which had all the problems. So we're not collecting passwords. You know, this is fundamental to an IT system, where somebody else could use your password and log into your computer and do a payment, etc. And these are some of the issues that we have. Yes, the innovation is, I am coming to by the minister for a model which says that this fund maybe should be run outside of government. It can still account to government, but this is a fund that's been caused, it's a defined benefit fund. So if you're saying, where do we go with this? The mining companies have caused the problem, they've got to resolve the problem. So you've got to look at where the legislation is in terms of governance. So you can work on accountability in terms of a reporting process, but in the true sense of the word, why should taxpayers' money be used? We in the true sense of the word, we are not asking for additional funds from here. There's a unit called RAND Mutual Assurance. RAND Mutual Assurance is licensed under the Department of Employment and Labor, under the FIDA Act, Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Disease, functions completely outside of government. It's a 15 billion rand fund, and it collects the levies, and it pays for occupational injuries and diseases for the same mine workers that we are linking to. So if you are saying that we want accountability of a process, then deal with the accountability issues like RAND Mutual. There's another fund called FEMA, Federated Employer Mutual Association, which covers the construction industry. It's licensed under the Department of Employment and Labor to look after workers in the construction industry. Functions completely out of government, outside of government. They have one representative from the Department of Employment and Labor, the commissioner, who sits on their board. But the 90% of the board members are non-governmental people. And they don't account. They don't. I think we made the last requirement that they start accounting now through the Department of Labor Compensation Fund to Parliament. Because up to now, they have not accounted to it. So this fund itself should actually be moving in that direction as a progressive approach. But ultimately, it's up to parliamentarians to decide if they want to continue with keeping it in. So the innovations are, you've got a 4.6 billion fund that's totally dysfunctional. I mean, notwithstanding, members have recognized that we have made some input. But in terms of the fact of social protection, pension funds, provident funds, etc., they operate under completely different authorities like the Financial Services Authority or National Treasury, etc. But on the partnership issues, staff shortages, one of the issues is the IT system will be the savior. It's an electronic system from Amzimkulu all the way to payments, and we are putting that into action. The timeline to clear the backlog, we have started with the public-private partnerships with World Bank, Global Fund, mining companies, and we are including platinum and coal. But we have to start somewhere, in terms of course, and gold was the most severe problem in terms of silicosis, etc. So we have 33,000 cases of silicosis. Out of the 140,000 cases of TB over the last 30 years, 80% came from gold. Coal was 10,000 cases, platinum was about 5,000 cases. So on the sum of gains, gold was the major problem. When you have limited resources, you have to start somewhere. So members would recall that we had to put in a plan to start with the biggest value for money, but we are not neglecting coal. In fact, we have had outreach activities in coal, and we're due to go to Rustenburg and Marikana shortly for an outreach activity, chairperson, in terms of some of the work in terms of that. The backlog, I've mentioned that if things work with no more labor unrest, with the IT systems in place that are functional, with the input that by July, August next year, we should have cleared the backlog in annual statements, with the other annual reports kicking in that your committee will look at, but the final report of the 1920 will probably be in July, August next year, which would have been cleared by the Auditor General for your district. So we'd have missed the May deadline, which is normally the cutoff for 2 months after the financial year, but we would definitely have done this thing. So that's the timeline to deal with that. On some of the other issues of unpaid claims, etc., we have reached 80,000 people over the last 3 years with programs that started with Minister Motsoaledi, Deputy Minister Godfrey Oliphant was very instrumental in taking us forward, the former Deputy Minister in the Department of Mineral Resources. So we reached 80,000 people, but and that's why we paid our 23,000 claim, because not everybody that we reached had a claim with us, etc. So that's it. The IT system, we are due to implement the new IT system. We just went through some governance issues in the department for the clearance issues, because it is a public-private partnership. The Minerals Council is funding this integrated IT system, including the artificial intelligence of reading the x-rays, etc. So very simply put, an x-ray would be taken of a mine worker in Amzimkulu on a mobile clinic. The artificial intelligence will read the x-ray in 20 seconds, saying whether it's normal, tuberculosis, or other, even before the person puts his gown on. So that's the work we're doing, and that's something that we are working on right now in the final stages. Yeah, I think we covered then the issues of support. I think honourable members have raised the issues of what's coming, and maybe Ms. Rennie will talk a bit more about what support coming. So we are getting support from the National Department of Health. It may not be at the levels of our expectations. And I think fundamental to the process is industrial relations. I need a formal industrial relations process that kicks in many ways, and that's been our major lack in terms of the deficiencies we've had in terms of the internal trade unions and going on strikes, going on work stoppages, etc. And I don't have it within me in terms of a directive from the DG in terms of disciplinary processes, etc. It has to come from an IR process, and we've had major problems with IR, and you can go back in the difficulties we've had with that internal process. So I've given the inputs on the awareness campaign. TB compensation, I'm just going to leave it to my colleague to answer the TB compensation. And then I covered the issues around the pecking order of where are we on the issues of inputs. And again, we'd welcome from the members of the committee forensic investigations and inputs on terms of inputs. And let me just conclude on the part before handing over to my colleagues on the TV side. Your previous committee had asked for the commissioner to be fired, and the committee is welcome to do that once more. Thanks, Chair.
After Dr. Mujali, I would like to prepare our DDG Renee to come in here to make some confessions.
Thank you, Chair. I will address the question from Honourable TB, simple TB or occupational TB is only when you work more than 200 shifts, meaning which is an equivalent of about 9 months in the mine, or when you get TB after within 12 months of leaving the mine. So that's the only time we cover a TB and we call it occupational TB. However, it has to be reported as soon as you have TB. And then once you complete treatment, then we train doctors then to do the impairment assessment, meaning to check whether there's any sequelae or fibrosis or by doing a repeat x-ray and lung function test. And then we assess whether it's $63,000 payable as Director of Finance mentioned, $63,000 or second degree payable $140,000, $145,000. However, if you have MDR TB, immediately we pay out $30,000. If you have XDR TB, we pay second degree. So that's how we manage TB. So most of the TB that we get from the X-mine workers is X-mine workers who have silicosis. So those become second degree immediately. So if you have any pneumoconiosis or any occupational disease, then you have TB, then we regard that as a disease. So those are the scenarios of TB. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and I note your final comment about preparing your document before, well, later this week, so that you can maybe make an input to the budget review or the process. So we will prepare you some of those issues of opportunities, challenges, and clearance issues. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah. I note that you are mentioning third time now that we are free to fire you. Hold on with that. We'll talk internally. Look, I think after your explanation, some of the issues that were actually not well covered, covered. DDG Renee?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm responding to the question, what is the role of National Health in trying to support the COD? And Dr. Kitmasane refers to history. So I will take it from there, Chairperson, so that I give the honorable members an idea of where we're coming from for us to be here today with this plaza. By the way, in the department, this is the chief directorate. It is just that it is given this huge responsibility of managing the funds. And within the Department of Health, we regard this as a cluster because it is not yet a registered entity. That is why we, when we report, there is always provision of a line in our APP about CCOD, despite the fact that they are governed by a separate act that makes them report directly to the minister as a commissioner. So in terms of history, Chairperson said I must do confession, so I will try. In terms of history, when I joined this department in 2008, I came in at that time as a deputy CFO. There was a CFO that he referred to. So I found this institution, maybe let me say this unit, with a commissioner at the level of deputy director. That is level 10 or 11 or 12 at that time. It was shocking to find it like that. At that time, they were responsible for 1 billion plus. They didn't grow this much at that time. So, and they were being assisted by consultants. I have to say that at that time, I did not see the benefit or the expected results from those consultants. And that is why at that time we terminated their services. And during the transition and trying to reform the cluster or the unit, we also upgraded the post. We started by putting it at director level, advertised, nobody was interested. Nobody would be interested to come and manage this big fund at that low level with this responsibility. With all these financial positions that were presented, not at that level. So we had to review the and upgrade the post once again to put it at the level it is now. And yes, there was at some stage we were hoping that because we recruited a chartered accountant, we would be in a position to turn around the situation. We struggled until we recruited the current commissioner to come and support the deputy commissioner and the staff. Yes, at that time we picked up a lot of possible corruption on the ground at the lower level, touting, misleading the poor claimant, wanting something before they can be helped. All of that was identified. Hence, the commissioner is talking about we have elevated those investigations now to the level he has described. Then, yes, this cluster also is struggling with old infrastructure. Despite the real bricks and mortar, we're talking IT, old infrastructure. That is why we are now trying by all means to do and improve the IT system as yet. So I will not repeat on what has already said. Then the other challenge that is already mentioned is the labor peace at that cluster in Kaldek. There is none. We are barely surviving because the labor leadership that is at that cluster, they behave like they have an upper hand over management. So I've been called to CCOB on numerous occasions to try and assist and intervene. But we are hopeful that with the current peace, be it temporary as it might be, that things are moving forward. because we are trying to close the gap between labor and management so that everybody can work together within the confines of the law, without labor thinking that they are co-managing with the platform. That is the challenge that we have. The last issue, Chair, is related to the capacity, which I appreciate the concern that how do we work together with the people who are supposed to be monitoring or regulating. It was out of frustration because the department doesn't have adequate funding to assist them with the structure. They developed an ideal structure. However, that structure is unaffordable, especially if we are with the view that in the near future, this cluster, once it is healthy and no longer in ICU, can be handed over either to the Department of Labor or whatever the Act will come up with, the revision of the Act. That was the initial, many years ago, that was the plan that we should move this to the Department of Labor. But at that time they said, this is in ICU, this baby, we don't want this baby the way it is, fix it. When it's healthy, we can talk. So, because of that, we were not able to give them the post that they were requesting and the level. It was almost like creating another department. But with the billions that they are managing, so we asked them to scale down on their required structure and see how best we can assist them with the current limitations that we have with budget cuts and filling on the compensation of employees and all that. So we are doing the best we can, Chairperson, to assist.
But DDG Renee, don't you think that we are prolonging the stay of this baby in the ICU if we are not able to maybe compromise from what they are initially requesting as this top range structure to a middle, so that the labor is not going to accept for as long as the baby is in the ICU, but then the onus is upon all of us, you leading, to get the baby out of the ICU, not maybe with the best of the best, but with a structure better than what they have. So what is the impasse now? Where do we stand? Well, that's where it looks like things are.
Thank you, Chairperson. You're absolutely correct, and that is where we are. We have discussed that with them. We have given them the bare minimum to say, give us information on this one, we will do the best we can. So we are in that process because they need, largely, the first thing that they need is when we get out of here, that would make things easier for them, is a person who we refer to as an administrator who will work directly with the commissioner and the deputy commissioner. They don't have that person. We used to, we once gave them a seconded official at chief director level, and things started working a little bit, and then the labor unrest or impact started, and then we had to remove the person, and now there's a gap.
Mm-hmm.
But we have created that post now, it is approved. All we have to do is to follow due process for the post to be advertised, and then we can close that gap as a stopgap measure. Thank you, Chair.
Well, remember, it looks like we do come in ourselves as parliamentarians. We need to maybe get to the level of the House Chair to be able to bring together certain portfolio committees. You could advise me which many, but Mineral Energy Portfolio Committee, Employment and Labour, Health. I don't know who else to bring at that level.
Public Works.
But just to nature this thing, this baby, it is those three. Well, at the end of it all, we need to say, where do they end? Okay, public works will be to deal with what they have. So I would probably think that if you give that support, we will probably write to the House Chair and say, can it be possible that these portfolio committees meet and listen here and take what is our share? Well, we can't do all this ourselves. There needs to be an agreement among these parliamentarians. If this has to go into Parliament, it has to be a support of all these three portfolio committees or more. So otherwise, we will not be able to move it very far. At my level, I can't just go across to another portfolio chair and call him to a meeting. We'll have to request vertically and see how we do it. But I hope that the members now do appreciate that this unit was really necessary to come and present to us, because if we are aware that they are there and things are in this disarray, we will also be part of this thing. But you guys were aware things were not in order. What was your contribution to actually go out of it? So we are trying our bit to get it out of it with whatever you can. I think the bare minimum among other things is to say, let them one list what are these issues that they are going to deal with, or think their processes that are taking them out of the AG's concerns. What are their step by step? We need that for our own understanding as we will go about talk about. But number two, we think internally ourselves as parliamentarians, there are certain things that we need to put together to deal with in support of you. I'm grateful about the commitment of TDG Rene in this to support you. And we also plead with you, Dr. Kisnasami, don't ask for a Rolls Royce because you are not going to get it. You must get something less than that, but better than what you have, so that you can really navigate yourself out of the present scenario. And then all those things coming together, we could be able to say, Labour and Energy, look at them, listen to what they are now. They are better off with you out of our hands, but that's where they are. So all those processes, I think, must kick in simultaneously, and we see where we are going. Thank you very much for this, and I hope next time we meet you, we'll be able to, all of us, report progress on some of these things. Thank you very much, honorable members, and it does help to ask these questions, because you open up more to get them to explain even further. But I was impressed by you, Honorable Chira, and now I to ask myself, Konde, where do you come from? Do you come from Northwest? You live in Gauteng, and you still live in a province that has got a lot of mines. So your knowledge of mining is very good. Yeah. Okay. Honorable members, please indicate to the secretary before the end of the day that there's been an invite to us, which is taking us somewhere here in Cape Town. Cape Town. This invite in the President Hotel in the afternoon tomorrow at 1800 hours. It's on the TB. TB HIV epidemic. Yeah. So I might as well tell you, we are getting a lot of invites for this TB caucus. I spoke to the House Chair with regards to House Chair. We are ignoring these ones because, I mean, we are not yet constituted as a TB caucus with the NCOP. The House Chair said, let us accept this invite. Among other things, they want me to go and just do some comments. Please indicate to the Secretary, those of you who will be available and will need transport support, indicate to the Secretary before at least the end of the day so that she could then work on that. All right. Can you do it that way? Please, Honorable Member. Yeah. I'm told that because you did so well, we did not want to detain you till lunchtime, so there's no lunch provided. But you can take those funny-looking drinks. Honorable Members, we have to lead by example. If all of you are agreeable that as Portfolio Committee House, those drinks must be used in this Parliament, so be it. But if you are the first ones to disagree, let us commit next time to say, those drinks must be changed. And all of us, you can influence this Parliament to go on water, and no such thing.
Water.
Okay. Give me that recommendation next time. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Thank you.